Presented by DogNation.com in partnership with the AJC. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
So the other day we were having a pretty interesting conversation here on Dog Nation Daily. I was talking to Jeremy Birmingham, who I think just does a great job covering Ohio State recruiting. I don't necessarily like that subject, but I do like Berm's work in covering that subject for landof10.com. And I just think Jeremy's a good recruiting analyst to have here on Dog Nation Daily as well. So we were talking about some of the what had gone on at the U.S. Army All-American Bowl in San Antonio over the weekend. And one of the things I'd asked Jeremy was to, you know, kind of give some insight into what he saw from some of the Georgia commits, kind of, you know, who jumped off the page to him, who he noticed during the practices during the game, who he was impressed by. And when I ask a question like that, I have a couple of ideas as to what the answer to a question like that might be. But the answer that Jeremy gave was not necessarily the player that I thought that he would probably bring up. So as a way of kind of setting up our conversation today, I want to start with that very issue right there. Who was the person that was impressive among the crop of UGA commits at the U.S. Army All-American Bowl in San Antonio? Here was the first name that Jeremy Birmingham brought to mind.
For me, I think the one that's constantly overlooked because of all the talk around Najee Harris, the Alabama commitment, and Cam Akers, the Florida State commitment, is DeAndre Swift, the running back out of Philadelphia. I think he's on that level. I think that he's a guy that once he gets the ball in his hands is as explosive as Akers and probably a better home run threat right now than Najee is when it comes to just getting the ball and running. And I think he's a guy that with the way that Georgia is going to be looking to use their running backs the way they've always used their running backs, but he's got to be someone that people consider as a legitimate threat for early playing time there.
When I do this show, I make an assumption. I assume that most of you are pretty plugged into Georgia recruiting. The responses I get from you on Twitter and the comment section there at DogNation.com always seem to prove that out. You guys know this class pretty well. And so I think the one thing that you would probably agree there is that the word that Jeremy Birmingham, an Ohio State recruiting expert, but a guy that knows the UGA commits, the word that he uses there is pretty apt in terms of a description for DeAndre Swift. He is overlooked. He probably doesn't get as much attention as he probably should get. And the degree to which he is overlooked means as a player, DeAndre Swift probably is underrated. And the number one reason why that's probably true is what Jeremy Birmingham just laid out right there, that the four-star running back commit for Georgia, a part of this 2017 class, doesn't seem to be noticed by the rest of the country as much as Cam Akers, who is on his way to Florida State, or Najee Harris, who's on his way to Alabama. And one of the reasons why Harris gets more attention than DeAndre Swift probably gets is because Harris had a lot of histrionics with his recruiting. You know, you had Jim Harbaugh going out to California and you know, holding the first down marker during the game, all those things that he did, and you know, the fact that the Alabama fans and the Michigan fans went head to head in that battle over Harris's services, that's going to get him a lot of attention. But did you hear what Jeremy Birmingham just said there? That the Georgia commit, in a lot of ways, even though he's just a four-star player, has shown some things in an all-star week like last week in San Antonio and the camp circuit leading up to a senior year that potentially make him more impressive as a prospect to a neutral observer, by the way. I mean, Jeremy doesn't get points. You know, no one reads his stuff because he says something nice about a Georgia guy. He doesn't have a dog in this fight. But he says there's aspects of the DeAndre Swift game more impressive than five-star Cam Akers and more impressive than five-star Najee Harris, even though they're getting most of the headlines. And by the way, it's not just Jeremy Birmingham who's saying that. Our own Jeff Sintel, when he joined me yesterday on Dog Nation Daily, also talked about what impressed him about the work that DeAndre Swift did last week in San Antonio. Here's Jeff.
What he flashed every day in practices, just running over people, running through people, popping tackles of All-Americans. DeAndre Swift is the real deal, folks. DeAndre Swift is your prototype. Nobody can look at him and say, what does that kid not have? He's got size, he's got speed, he's got elusiveness. The vision, I think, is his most important quality, as well as his tools, his ability to catch the football out of the backfield, to make a guy miss, to run with toughness, to run with elusiveness.
So if he's that good, then why is he so underrated? Why is he so overlooked? If he brings that kind of skills to the table, like what Jeff Sintel just described and like what Jeremy Birmingham just described, then how come he's not getting more attention? Well, guess what? If you just want to be honest here for a moment and kind of lay it out, it may not just be the national recruiting analysts who are at fault here. It may not be just those guys who are overlooking him and underrating DeAndre Swift. Georgia fans might be to blame here a little bit as well. Because the other reason why DeAndre Swift might be overlooked is because of where he comes from. After all, he's not an in-state product for Georgia. He's not even a guy from the South. He's way up there in Philadelphia, and Jeff Sintel says that spot where he comes from, the city of brotherly love, may be one of the reasons why he's so underrated heading towards signing day in 2017.
I'm going to try to write a lot more about DeAndre Swift over the next 2 weeks because he's going to come in for his official visit this weekend. But he's in Philadelphia, and I don't think even our leaned-in readers and consumers of our content, I don't think they really know what they have.
So this is one of those things where, to a certain degree, we know this is true, right? I mean, I even say this explicitly here on Dog Nation Daily, that in-state recruits to me are more important than out-of-state recruits. Doesn't mean they're better players, but I do put a premium and a priority on in-state recruiting because it's the kind of well you can keep going back to year after year. So when Georgia gets a player like DeAndre Swift from up in Pennsylvania, or like his cousin Mark Webb, a four-star receiver, who's also a part of this 2017 recruiting class, there is a degree to which they are going to be at times out of sight, out of mind, because our listeners didn't grow up watching those guys play each and every Friday night. That's just a fact. And that's one of the reasons why when Swift does get on campus, even though he's got the kind of accolades that he brings to the table, and even though you've got guys like Sintel and Birmingham saying that he was one of the stars of the U.S. Army All-American game, he still has the potential of being a real pleasant surprise for Georgia next fall. And the other reason, frankly, why DeAndre Swift might be a little overlooked here and potentially a little underrated is also because Georgia, when it comes to recruiting, is probably dealing with kind of a nice situation right now. You know, when you have as many four- and five-star recruits as Georgia's bringing in for the class of 2017, it's sort of hard to give them all the attention that they deserve. And, you know, Swift plays the running back position, a spot where Georgia's already got some talent, some of the other guys who kind of come in who fill more immediate needs. It's easy to gravitate towards them. And it's probably easy to gravitate towards the big personalities like Richard LeCount, the defensive back, or Jake Fromm, the incoming freshman quarterback. It's easy to pay attention to the five-star offensive tackle, Isaiah Wilson. It's easy to sort of divide your attention in all those different ways. But once again, here's Jeff Sintel to remind us that as you're carving out that attention, as you're carving out your excitement for who you like seeing Georgia add here in the class of 2017, make sure you leave some room for DeAndre Swift. That's what Jeff Sintel says.
I know people, you know, are thankful that they got LeCount and Fromm and Gibbs and even Isaiah Wilson, but the name DeAndre Swift needs to be right smack dab in the middle of anyone's top fives about the haul of the very best players that Georgia's getting in this 2017 class. That guy is a dude.
So that's a pretty bold statement from Jeff. Jeff's good at giving those kind of bold statements, but it's really that sentiment that made me want to start the show with this here today. You know, we have talked about a lot of guys on this program. Pretty much ever since Christmas, we've done recruiting here in the forefront of this show each and every single day. But we probably haven't talked enough about DeAndre Swift, and there probably is a lot about this young man's game at the running back position that give Georgia fans a lot of reason to be excited for the class of 2017. But let me also pump the brakes here just for a moment. I don't want to grow the legend too much of Swift before he gets on campus. After all, as an attempt to be fair and balanced here, let's try to give some perspective exactly where he does fit in to the Georgia running back rotation here this upcoming season and kind of how he compares to Georgia recruits in the last few years. As a matter of fact, I asked that question to Jeremy Birmingham when he came on the show earlier in the week. You know, how does he look in comparison to the Chubbs and Michelles coming out of high school, to the Sony Michelles, the Keith Marshalls a little bit before that? Is he that kind of recruit? Does he have a chance to be the next great Georgia running back? Well, here was Jeremy Birmingham's pretty objective assessment of that.
I don't know that he's on the same level as Gurley. I think that what you look at with Sony Michel, I think he's that type of player. I don't know that he's an every down back, and I don't know that you ever really want him to be. He's a little bit on the small side, but he's exceptionally versatile, catches the ball well, and very dynamic with the ball in his hands. But I don't know that he's a 25-30 carry game back, but like, you know, Gurley or someone or Nick Chubb is.
So here's the bottom line for me. He may not be the next Todd Gurley, certainly may not be the next Herschel Walker, But I don't necessarily think Georgia needs to be looking for the next Herschel Walker, because that's not what modern college football is anymore. It's not about having one running back that gets all the carries. It's about having a collection of talent at the running back position that you sort of never run out of fresh and able bodies. And it certainly appears that Georgia's putting that together. With Nick Chubb, Sony Michel, their decision to return for their senior season, with Brian Harrion, Elijah Holyfield waiting in the wings, and now another very competent, capable name added to that list. DeAndre Swift, four-star running back from Pennsylvania, one of the centerpieces of Georgia's 2017 recruiting class, often overlooked, but certainly not someone who's not consequential and potentially a very good player at Georgia at the next level. My name's Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. And, you know, speaking of Georgia recruiting, what a great night we had last night. At the Marlowe's Tavern, Emery Point location, with myself and Jeff Sintel. Many of you stopped by to see us. We certainly appreciate that. Thank you so much for your support of our event, for your support of Jeff's work at DogNation.com, the support here of Dog Nation Daily. It's always great when we do these kind of events to get a chance to meet you, get to know you, and talk to you about how much you're interacting and what you enjoy, what you think about what we're doing here at DogNation.com. A ton of fun. And if you came out last night, or if you got a chance to watch the broadcast, I know you like seeing a couple really impressive members of Georgia's 2017 recruiting class. Just started the show by talking about DeAndre Swift, how impressive he might be. A couple other names you need to add to that list of impressive guys in their own right, both from Pace Academy, both with us last night at Marlowe's Tavern, Emery Point. Four-star wide receiver Trey Blunt, four-star wide receiver Andrew Thomas, exceptional young men. Not just players. By now you've seen their game film. You know what the recruiting analysts are saying about these guys. You know how good they are on the field. But how impressive were these guys as young men last night? Go check out the interviews. You have a chance to see that for yourself. Smart guys, a lot of thought they put into their own recruitment, the recruitment of the other guys they want to see join Georgia for the class of 2017. These are the kind of guys that will make you proud if you're a Georgia fan. And that's one of the reasons why Jeff and I are doing these shows here on Tuesday night, to help you get more acquainted with these guys for the class of 2017 for Georgia, to show you that the class that Georgia's putting together is not just good by the sort of traditional analytics and measurements, how it ranks nationally, but it's also a great class in terms of the character and the integrity of the players that Georgia's bringing in. Trey Blunt, Andrew Thomas, examples of that. Really fun to be with them last night on Facebook Live there at Marlowe's Tavern. And if you missed us last night, we're going to be with you again this upcoming Tuesday night from 5 to 7 p.m. Once again, Marlowe's Tavern. This time, it's the Mall of Georgia location. So if you're in Buford, if you're in Gwinnett County, if that's your Marlowe's, please come on by and see us at the Mall of Georgia next week. I love this location. I used to live very, very close there. I've kind of moved away from there now. So I'm looking forward to being back on the scene there again, and looking forward to meeting you if you're in the Gwinnett County area, as we once again get you ready for National Signing Day from 5 to 7 p.m. on Facebook Live and at Marlowe's Tavern, Mall of Georgia. That's next Tuesday from 5 to 7 p.m. I'll also give you the Gator Hater Countdown. Now, 289 days between the Georgia-Florida game in Jacksonville next year. If you need another reason to get excited about this one, by the way, I got a really interesting note on Twitter. An outrageous thing that Florida has done here, and I want to thank Tim for sending this to me, but an outrageous thing that Florida has done here. Look on the swamp. They've kind of painted Ben Hill Griffith Stadium. They've got all the, quote, SEC East championships that they've won. And one of the years that they put up there as having won the SEC East, according to a picture that I got on Twitter here early this morning, is the 2012 SEC East title. Now, I think I was alive for this one. I think I lived through it. I'm pretty sure Georgia beat Florida on the field that year, went on to Atlanta to play in the SEC championship game. By my count, Georgia SEC East champion for 2012. But apparently not according to Florida's math. You can check that out online yourself. And just another reason to get excited about the Gator Hater Countdown and get excited about Georgia-Florida coming up this October. After all, what we say here on this program, a good Georgia fan is a Gator Hater first and foremost. That is why we do the Gator Hater Countdown each and every day here on Dog Nation Daily. We are absolutely loaded on today's show. We've got so many subjects we really haven't spent enough time probably talking about over the last few days. One of those is the strange fight, skirmish, scuffle, whatever you want to call it, that the Georgia assistant coaches got into with the Missouri assistant basketball coaches in Saturday's basketball game. So I thought it'd be kind of interesting to hear from the guy who called that game on television, the SEC Network's Matt Stewart, going to be with us a little later on in the program. He'll talk about that. He'll also talk about what Georgia still needs to do to make the NCAA tournament, including a key stretch of two tough road games this week for the Dogs. We'll also talk a little football there as well. That's coming up later on in the show. But for now, I want to welcome in a good friend of the program. He is Benjamin Wolk. He covers Auburn recruiting for SECCountry.com. But Benjamin's a great resource here for us on Dog Nation Daily because he's going to be able to give us some insight on a player that Georgia's working really hard to impress here in the late stage of the recruiting battle. Four-star defensive end Markavius Bryant. Georgia doing a lot of work behind the scenes to get this young man to commit to Georgia, be a part of the 2017 signing class. Can they get it done? Benjamin Wolk's going to tell us right now. It's great to have him on the program. Great to have you with us here on Dog Nation Daily as well. And he does a great job covering Auburn recruiting for SEC Country. He is Benjamin Wolk. He's also a good friend of Dog Nation Daily as well. Benjamin, it's great to have you back on the program again. How you doing?
I'm doing very well. The dead period is almost over, my friend.
Yeah, the problem, though, for dead periods is there may be a dead period for coaches, but for recruiting reporters, there doesn't seem to be much of a dead period. Is that fair to say?
That's fair to say. A few days ago, I went down to Orlando for the Under Armour All-America game. I was over in Atlanta talking with a few recruits as well. So it's been a pretty busy dead period.
Yeah, no, that's certainly fair to say. And by the way, before we get into, like, the hardcore recruiting talk, can we have a tiny intervention here for Auburn fans here for a moment? After all, these are your readers. What are they doing rolling Toomer's Corner after the national championship game the other night? Don't they know that, I mean, listen, far be it from a Georgia podcast to tell Auburn fans how to handle their own traditions, but that seems like kind of a poor substitute for how that's supposed to actually go.
Yeah, well, it was a little bit of a 50-50 split from the fan base, I think, about how they felt about the fans that were doing that. I mean, it wasn't a huge group of the fan base that went to go roll the trees earlier in the week, but, you know, I heard a lot of Auburn fans that did not have very happy things to say about the fact that people were rolling trees just because of an Alabama loss. But, you know, when you only win 8 games, sometimes you try and roll those trees as much as you can.
No, I guess that's probably fair to say. Speaking of 50-50 splits, that's supposedly what the story was a few days ago from Markavius Big Cat Bryant in terms of choosing between Auburn, choosing between Georgia. Do you think that really is the apt description for how he feels in his mind right now? I mean, what is the latest on this player that I think that Georgia would really like to have and Auburn probably feels the same way about?
I mean, publicly, that's sort of how he describes it. He mentions Georgia and Auburn sort of as a 1-2 punch, with Georgia being the slight edge there over Auburn. I think that it's probably a little bit more in Georgia's favor than that. I think that if Markavius was deciding today, that Georgia would probably be the choice. Obviously, he doesn't have to make that decision today, and he's not the kind of guy that wants to rush into a decision. He isn't the kind of guy that wants to play a commit and flip game. He wants to be very comfortable with his decision when he makes it. And I think that's why he has been patient with it, because it has seemed for some time now like Georgia was the right place for him. He's obviously got his official visit to Georgia this weekend, and I think that that will dictate a lot how his recruitment plays out going forward. I wouldn't be surprised if he were to potentially silently or maybe even publicly commit to Georgia this weekend, depending on what they're feeding him in Athens. He told me at the Under Armour All-American game in Auburn a few weeks ago that, or in Orlando, I apologize, a few weeks ago, that he will potentially commit to the school that he wants to go to before signing day, even though he plans to sort of publicly announce it on signing day. He might tell the staff and then still take his other official visits. I think that probably put, you know, good news for Georgia, at least, because they are the first official visit of the contact period, with Auburn coming after that and then a potential LSU one following that. So I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up sort of finalizing things with Georgia this weekend, and that official visit to Athens will be critical in doing so.
You know, from the Georgia's perspective here, Benjamin, here's the thing that I think is really interesting. I think that right now Georgia has got a lot of recruits that it probably likes, and yet I think Georgia knows it can't take all of them. Now, somebody's probably going to say no, and somebody's going to be attracted to another school. But overall, I think Georgia's got some attraction here for a lot of players that it doesn't necessarily have room for. When you talk to guys, you know, around the region, you know, maybe Bryant included. Do other recruits, you think, get the sense here that Georgia's dealing with a numbers game? And I know that all SEC schools, to a certain extent, deal with those same limitations. But it seems like for Georgia here in 2017, it's pretty pronounced in terms of getting right to that 85 number. How aware do you think other recruits are of just how much number crunching is going on behind the scenes right now for Georgia?
Well, it sometimes depends on the recruit. A lot of recruits defer some of those in-the-know conversations to their family members or things like that. Big Cat is not one of those guys. Markavis Bryant knows. He's very aware of things as they're happening. I mean, just to give you an example on the other end of things, his big issue with Auburn early on in the season was the fact that they were having their third defensive coordinator in three seasons at Auburn, and the so much turnover at the defensive coordinator spot was a little bit of an issue for him. Likewise, I mean, he's very knowledgeable, he's very aware, and he knows the math that Kirby Smart and company are sort of trying to play in Athens right now. So it really does come down to how badly does Georgia want Markavis Bryant. I think that is a big reason why. And you look at some of the other guys on their board, Aubrey Solomon, Nico Collins, guys of that ilk, that you don't really know how many spots that they have left for a Markavis Bryant. Obviously, he's a great player, but when you get down to the nitty-gritty, it's sometimes hard to find that one extra scholarship spot that you need. Whereas on Auburn's end, they've got about six or so spots that they have left to fill, and Markavis Bryant very well might be number one on that board. I mean, I mentioned before that during the contact period in December, Markavis Bryant was the very first player that Auburn staff went out to go see. So that just shows you how the Tigers think of Markavis Bryant. Now, I can't speak for Georgia as much or how much emphasis they're putting on Markavis Bryant as a prospect compared to others in the class, but he's aware of the math. There's no doubt about that.
So you mentioned Aubrey Solomon there, and Solomon recently made some news in that he eliminated Florida and Auburn, focused on his final three, which is Georgia, Alabama, and Michigan. This wasn't unexpected. Most of the guys that do what you do for a living already had that trio of being the schools that Solomon was most interested in. But you also hear from a lot of Auburn fans, and you worked there at SEC Country. How disappointed were they to be kind of officially eliminated from the Aubrey Solomon sweepstakes?
Well, you know, it's been somewhat of a pessimistic couple of years here at Auburn, so I think that people weren't too surprised when they heard the news. With that said, I mean, he's a huge defensive tackle that Auburn would have loved to have in this class, and Rodney Garner, Georgia knows as well as anyone. Rodney Garner's had a ton of success in his career recruiting big-time defensive linemen, so I don't think Auburn completely ruled itself out, even though it sort of that seemed to be the trend. Obviously, the fact that there's a good opportunity for him to land at Georgia or Alabama makes that situation sting a little bit more, because he's going to be a great player wherever he ends up.
So Auburn gets the transfer at quarterback, Jared Stidham. That's a former five-star prospect. Recently got some good news in that Calvin Ashley, the elite offensive lineman, he's not going to look around. He's going to stay rock solid there with Auburn. Herb Hand done a pretty good job with that Auburn offensive line. He gets a nice player to work with. Overall, how is this Auburn class coming together? Do Tigers fans feel pretty good about what Gus Malzahn and company are putting on the board here?
Well, like I mentioned, there has been a little bit of pessimism throughout Auburn, not just on the team side, but on the recruiting side as well. And as we speak, Auburn has the number 8 class in the country, according to 247 Sports Composite Team Ranking. And that's right about, I mean, I think that describes this Auburn class pretty well. I mean, there's a couple big fish out there for them to land, Devin Hunter being one, Markavis Bryant being another. And if they can land those, they'll probably finish up right around 7 or 8. And I think that describes this class pretty well. If they don't land those guys, then they could maybe drop into the 10 to 15 category, which definitely will have Gus Malzahn on edge, I would say, going into the 2017 season if he isn't already. Now, that's not a slight on this Auburn class. There's some very talented football players in this class, and you know as well as anyone, I mean, a lot of times with these recruiting classes, it has a lot more to do with who you can keep around. I mean, I was doing a regrade of Auburn's 2012 class, which was Gene Chizik's last class in Auburn, and it was around 10, but of the 20 or so prospects that ended up signing with the class, only about half of them managed to make it to the end of their careers at Auburn. So a lot of times it's more about being able to keep the numbers in place that you get once you sign, make sure that they all get through graduation and actually see the field and play. But with that said, I mean, Auburn has some talented players. K.J. Britt, as Georgia knows, Tadarian Moultrie, Calvin Ashley, Nick Brom. I mean, there's a bunch of really talented players in this Auburn class. It might not be of the caliber of Ohio State, Alabama, Michigan, Georgia, those types of schools right now. But they're a top 10 class, and they can work their way, you know, a little bit ahead of maybe number 10 if things fall their way down the stretch.
Benjamin, great stuff. Great to have you back here on Dog Nation Daily. How can folks find you on Twitter?
My Twitter handle is at Benjamin Wolk.
We'll look forward to having you here on Dog Nation Daily again very soon, all right?
Awesome. Thanks, Brandon. I appreciate it.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
All right, time now for our SEC Through. It is brought to you by SECCountry.com. And as I'm saying, then I'll also remind you to make sure you check out those SEC Country Recruiting War Room videos about to show up there on SECCountry.com, just like the ones you've been watching at DogNation.com, brought to you by Kroger. We've got a nice batch of those coming up for you on SEC Country as well. You can kind of keep in touch with some of the SEC prospects around the region, including some of those guys like, say, Jamias Williams, current South Carolina commit. You won't see him show up in the Dog Nation Kroger Recruiting War Room, but you will see him there on SEC Country. So if you want to get a little intel on some guys that Georgia might try to flip here before it's all said and done, make sure you check that out. Speaking of the SEC, you know, I still am thinking about, you know, what goes down with the national championship game on Monday and kind of what the long-term ramifications are going to be for that for college football. And I guess the one thing that I keep coming to is this. You know, in a lot of ways, what happened on Monday is Goliath being toppled, right? I mean, Alabama is the bull of the woods when it comes to college football, so much so that I heard a lot of people, you know, national analysts, you know, influential voices on social media, they were all saying something to the degree of they were bored by Alabama and just looking forward to seeing anybody else other than Alabama be the national champion. And so those people kind of got their wish. Goliath was toppled. And yet what's so interesting about this example of the heavyweight, the heavy favorite going down, is that it's so many, in so many ways, it's so different than what we've seen in other aspects of sports, where when the great champion in another sport goes down to defeat, it's almost always a tremendous shock. But at least based on the public posture that's out there, the Clemson victory over Alabama is not necessarily that big of a shock. You know, I follow the gambling markets. I pay attention to that. And, you know, a lot of the sports books, the folks out in Las Vegas are claiming they're taking high six-figure losses on the national championship game. That not only did a lot of people come in and bet Clemson, but this national championship game had a large, what they call handle, the overall amount of money wagered on the game. There was just a huge degree of interest in betting on this game because apparently a lot of people thought Clemson was going to win. And that's not just true from the betting public standpoint. I think the media standpoint also, you know, you had a lot of folks picking Clemson here. I was in a lot of ways on an island here. I thought Alabama would win the game. I actually thought by the time it kicked off that Alabama would probably win easy. And that's how wrong I was about this. Most of the public was going the other direction. Most of the public was picking Clemson to win, and that's exactly what happened. So this is a weird scenario when the sort of all-time great team, heavyweight, you know, heavy favorite going down, and yet a lot of the public sort of thought this had a chance to happen. So the question we then ask ourselves is, what does this mean going forward? Is this the end of the Alabama dynasty? And is now Clemson the program that other programs are going to try to emulate? And for me, I think that's taking it too far. I think it's getting way too ahead of yourself to assume that an Alabama loss in the national championship game suddenly means that the Alabama process is broken, that the dynasty's over. Frankly, we've all had our turn at trying to proclaim the Alabama dynasty being over, and all of us who've said that at one point in time or another were eventually proven wrong. And I think people who try to proclaim Alabama as this dynasty being over now, I think they'll be wrong too. Now, I think Alabama potentially has some problems in 2017. As I've said before, I don't think the transition from Lane Kiffin, an offensive coordinator, to Steve Sarkisian, an offensive coordinator, is necessarily a seamless one. But I think the Alabama program is still the flagship program for all of college football. Because you don't prove your greatness by never losing, because that's impossible standard to get to. Everyone's going to lose eventually. The way that you prove greatness in college football is by always being in the mix for big wins. And Alabama next season, by virtue of another number one overall recruiting class, is going to be back in the mix. Heavy favorite once again in the SEC, I think the likely winner of this league in 2017, and therefore a heavy favorite be once again back in the college football playoff. And listen, if you put yourself on a trajectory where you're back in the playoffs over and over and over again, you are going to get your share of national championships over time. That's as much as anyone can ask from any program. In a lot of ways, I feel the same way about Alabama as I do Ohio State. The program in college football that's just a sort of a tick below the Crimson Tide right now, I think Ohio State's also a very likely team to be back in the playoff again next season. So from that standpoint, if, you know, the people that listen to this show are Georgia fans, but let's say you were a neutral observer, if you had your choice of which fan base you'd rather be in, you'd rather be an Ohio State fan, you'd rather be an Alabama fan than you would a Clemson fan, because ultimately it's those two programs that are still set up for more long-term success than what Clemson is. Clemson's riding high right now, and they're putting some work together in the future in recruiting. But don't be so quick to assume that they're going to be one day just as good as what Ohio State and Alabama have been. We'll make that your SEC through. And we welcome in Matt Stewart back to Dog Nation Daily, a guy that's been a guest in this program before. You probably saw on Saturday with the SEC Network broadcast of the Georgia-Missouri game. Matt, welcome back to the program. How you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Well, I'm glad to have you here. And, of course, you're a broadcast veteran. You've seen a lot of things over the course of your career. But where would the scuffle between the Georgia coaches right there and the Missouri assistant coach right there at halftime kind of rank among the strange things that you've seen in your broadcast career?
Very near the top, no doubt about it. Very near the top. I mean, we've seen players scuffle. That's not that unusual. By and large, the players were not that much involved in it. I mean, the Georgia players, Georgia coaches did a great job of getting those guys pushed out of the way and headed to the locker room. And what was the really funny thing about the whole thing, and I just really think it's just hilarious, is that the two oldest coaches on both benches were the ones that were scrapping the most. Kent Davidson, who is the Dobo, that's the director of basketball operations for Georgia, and Steve Shields, an assistant coach for Kim Anderson there at Missouri, former head coach most recently at Little Rock. Those guys got into it. And what was really funny about it, if you go back and I know this is not a visual medium here, but if you go back and watch it, watch what kind of transpired there. The kid, Jordan Geis, for Missouri, was kind of in the mix of things, and Steve Shields started pushing his player out of the way, and Kent Davidson was also pushing him out of the way, and Steve Shields turns around and realizes that Kent Davidson is pushing his player out of the way, and the scrap ensues. It's almost like, look, I can push my player out of the way, but you get your hands off him.
Yeah, that's a really good description. It is a really good description. It's funny the way you said that. You know, I was at home watching it on television, and I think I was like a lot of people. I was rewinding the DVR back over and over again because it's almost like an altercation that didn't really have much of an incident, because as a fan of, you know, you see this kind of thing happen sometimes in sports. It's like, okay, so what set this off? And I've never seen something that actually turned into something, you know, semi-intense. There was almost like no catalyst point for it. It's sort of hard to find how it went from like step A to step Z, because it was pretty soft start to kind of, you know, end up with a pretty intense finish.
Yeah, and I think that the catalyst point that really escalated the whole thing was, you know, Kent Davidson was in there kind of, and I don't blame him. He was just kind of pushing the player out of the way, and Steve Shields turns around and says, you can't, get out of here. You can't push my player. Only I can push my player.
No doubt.
Because, you know, there really had been no chippiness whatsoever in the game. It was a pretty benign first half, 26-20, not a whole lot of physical contact or anything like that. And, then Geis came in there and, you know, held the last rebound after the horn was sounded with Yante Mayton. And, you know, there was a little pushing and, you know, a little struggle for the ball there. And then the Georgia players coming off the bench, you know, bumped into the back of him. And so all that stuff, you know, but really that wasn't what escalated the thing. It was the coaches.
Do you agree with what Missouri coach Kim Anderson said after the game, that really Georgia in a lot of ways, you know, including the crowd, by the way, fed off that moment, that for a Georgia team that sleptwalked through most of the first half, that, you know, that incident gave them the energy that they needed to finally put a pretty bad Missouri team away in the second half?
No doubt. I agree with that, and that's exactly what Mark Fox told us afterwards on SEC Network when we interviewed him, that they really got a lift, an emotional lift out of that. It's almost like in hockey. you know, when they go out, you know, the team's lagging, there's no energy, you know, and they send the goon out there. And I'm not saying Georgia purposely did this, but I'm just using this as a comparable.
Sure.
You know, they send the goon out there to start a fight and get the crowd into it, get the team all jacked up. And, you know, and it was, you know, Georgia drew off that energy. It was unintentional, no doubt about it. But it happened, and Georgia was able to draw off that, got the crowd in the game. You know, and the crowd wasn't in the game. You know, how could they be? Georgia scored 20 points in the first 20
yeah.
minutes. Georgia didn't really give them anything to cheer about, you know? I think they certainly did draw energy off of that.
And from that standpoint, we just touched on is the one issue that I can't, you know, seem to, you know, be able to overlook here, which is somehow, Matt, there just seems to be something a little off, not quite right about this Georgia team. I mean, individually, I think you love J.J. Frazier as a player.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're incredibly impressed by Yonte Maton as a player. I think some of the young guys, you know, Turtle Jackson, Harris, the freshman, there's some individual talent here, but somehow, you know, not being able to just easily dispose of a Missouri team that, from an RPI standpoint, is near the bottom of the country, something just doesn't seem quite right to me with Georgia. I mean, you saw it from the best seat in the house on Saturday. What was your overall perspective of Georgia as a team?
Well, I will say this about Missouri, and if you watch, in their first three SEC games this year, their home game against LSU, their road game against Georgia, and then last night against Auburn, they had leads in the half of all three games. And lost the leads in the second half and, you know, got blown out by LSU. Georgia looked like they were going to pull away and never were quite able to in the second half, and Auburn beat them last night as well at home at Missouri. You know, this is just not a very complete Missouri team, but they are an SEC team. They're not without talent. You know, their RPI is in the 200s, and their RPI looks like, you know, Lipscomb or a team like that, but they're not a Lipscomb. And I'm not disparaging
sure.
Lipscomb in any way, because Lipscomb beat them by 5 points in Mizzou Arena. but I'm just trying to, you know, paint a picture here for folks. They do have SEC talent. I mean, Jordan Barnett's an SEC talent. Kevin Puryear's an SEC talent. You know, Terrence Phillips, their point guard, SEC talent. You know, they just don't have really a complete team yet, and I don't know when they're going to have one. But, you know, they are an SEC team. And Georgia and LSU and Auburn and all those teams like that, no one's just going to drill them, I don't think. You know, Kentucky will. But I don't take too much out of that. It's an SEC game, and SEC games are hard regardless. So, but I will say this, going back to your point, Georgia is Maton and Frazier. I mean, Maton and Frazier account for 49% of their points, and they were close to that number in the Missouri game, and we'll see what they do tonight at Ole Miss. But as Maton and Frazier go, and that's a very good combination, but as they go, Georgia's going to go. Georgia's not going to go any farther than those two guys. And if either one of those guys has an off night, it's going to be very difficult for Georgia to win the game.
And you mentioned tonight's game at Ole Miss. I think you'd probably agree with me that this is a crucial week for Georgia. In Oxford tonight mm-hmm. against a Rebels team that might be pretty good, certainly on Saturday against a Florida team that I think is good. I think Mike White's a very mm-hmm. good coach and doing a good job with the
yep.
Gators. If Georgia wants to be an NCAA tournament team, these road tests this week might be one of those tests that you have to pass, at least one of these games, I would think, to really kind of stay in that conversation the way that Mark Fox wants to be. Is that fair to say?
I think so. I think you want to split this week. If Georgia could walk out of this week with a split, you know, thinking that Ole Miss probably is the most likely place that you're going to get the win this week, just simply because they're not quite as tough as Florida. But I think, yeah, a split would be great for Georgia. You know, I thought it was tough. I mean, they lost against South Carolina at home, and you know, I know they wish they had that one back, because when they won that opener at Auburn, I thought Georgia would be 3-0 going into this week instead of 2-1. So now you're facing a situation where you're 2-1, and hopefully you can get out of the week, you know, at 3-2 in the conference. But I mean, you look at their numbers, and I didn't check them today, but the last time I checked them, you know, their ESPN daily RPI was at 37, I think, which certainly puts them on the bubble, and their
sure.
strength of schedule was 9, which is great. So, I think if you're just looking at the numbers, Georgia's an NCAA tournament team right now. I think it would be hard-pressed for the committee to keep them out, especially given the strength of schedule that they've played.
We'll see how that plays out in the weeks ahead. We'll finish up with a little thought on football from you. You know, as you know, Matt, on the field for Georgia in 2016, you know, there was probably as much bad as good, 8-5 record, not what Georgia fans want. And yet it seems like because of Chubb, Michelle, Davin Bellamy, Lorenzo Carter, their decision to come back, the work that Kirby Smart's doing in recruiting right now, the optimism optimism has returned for 2017. Do you think that optimism right now is well placed, given what you think about Georgia and how they kind of stack up to the rest of the SEC right now?
I think the optimism is, I don't think it's misguided. I mean, look at it. That's why coaches love these bowl games, by the way, because Georgia gets a chance to, you know, go into 2017 feeling great about themselves because they beat an average TCU team. And again, I don't want to tell you, it's a win's a win. And you go in on a high note, and all those things that you just mentioned are exactly right. You get all, you know, you get those four players coming back, especially Chubb and Michelle, which I thought might go. And certainly I thought Chubb would go, and I was surprised that he didn't, but good for him. He, you know, he made a decision that was best for him and his family, and you know, and that's great. That's what it's all about. I mean, it shouldn't be an automatic, you know, well, you go, and it shouldn't be an automatic you stay. It should be a decision that you make based upon, you know, evaluating all the variables. And I think the recruiting class, man, you ought to be excited about that. Richard LeCount and D'Angelo Gibbs and Jake Fromm are already enrolled, and they've got, you know, they've got, by my count, they've got a five-star, Isaiah Wilson, committed to them on the offensive line. They've got four stars committed to them on the offensive line, including, I think it is DeMarcus Hayes out of junior college, who's already enrolled as well. So I think that's great, because I think we all recognize that offensive line has been a big deficiency for them, and it was a glaring deficiency for them this year. And they've got some reinforcements coming in, and 1 5-star and 4 4-stars, hopefully out of that group of five players, some of them connect and are really good.
Well, Matt, that's a great way to describe the situation there. It was great to see on the SEC Network on Saturday. I thought you did a great job on the call of Georgia, Missouri. And it's been really nice to have you back on Dog Nation Daily again today. We'll look forward to speaking to you soon.
Anytime.
All right, so as we wrap up here today, you know, we have not really talked about the fact that Vegas is already putting out national title odds for 2017. And, you know, for me, as I've said before this week, you really can't do that soon enough for me. Up at the top, you've got Alabama at 4-1. You got Florida State at 7-1. Interesting, the Florida State's the ACC team with the best national championship odds. Clemson, by virtue of the fact that it's losing to Deshaun Watson, just 16-1 next season. Same odds, another ACC team, Louisville, at 16-1. Other SEC team below Alabama is LSU. They're at 12-1. And the number that you care about the most is where Georgia is. And I think Georgia's in a pretty interesting cluster here. Georgia, along with Auburn and Florida and Miami, which has Georgia's old coach Mark Richt, they're at all 33-1 next year to win the national championship. Listen, I'm not going to tell you that Georgia's going to win that trophy, but 33-1, pretty good odds. We'll talk to you tomorrow.